It's time for Chasing the Word on Compassion Radio.
Good Monday morning, and welcome to Chasing the Word on Compassion Radio.
And good morning to you, honey. This is our chance to work with our Compassion Radio partners around the world to start the week off right. And we want you to join with us in studying the Word, because it is the thing upon which everything else is built. So Mondays are our day to actually take a deep dive into the Word. For the past few months, it's been the Book of John.
It's a good way to refocus your week.
I hope so. The first focus of the week. And it's in chapter 7 that we're beginning this week. So let's just jump into the story and see where we are.
John chapter 7, verse 1, and it's from the Holman Christian Standard Version. And the title of this particular section is The Unbelief of Jesus' Brothers. So we're going to kind of dive into family relationships here for a few minutes.
And unbelief.
Yeah. After this, and this is after the things that happened in chapter 6 that we spent a lot of time on.
If you want to hear more about that, go back and check any of our podcasts at CompassionRadio.com.
So after this, Jesus traveled in Galilee, since he did not want to travel in Judea because the Jews were trying to kill him. The Jewish festival of Tabernacles was near, so his brothers said to him, "Leave here and go to Judea so your disciples can see your works that you're doing. For no one does anything in secret while he's seeking public recognition and fame. If you do these things, show yourself to the world, for not even his brothers believed in him." I think we could spend a whole day on that one. But we're going to continue here. Jesus told them, "My time has not yet arrived, but your time is always at hand. The world cannot hate you, but it does hate me because I testify about it, that its deeds are evil. Go up to the festival yourselves. I'm not going up to the festival yet because my time has not yet fully come." After he had said these things, he stayed in Galilee. After his brothers had gone up to the festival, then he also went up, not openly, but secretly. The Jews were looking for him at the festival and saying, "Where is he?" And there was a lot of discussion about him among the crowds. Some were saying, "He's a good man." Others were saying, "No, on the contrary, he's deceiving the people." Still, no one was talking publicly about him because they feared the Jews. When the festival was already half over, Jesus went up into the temple complex and began to teach. Then the Jews were amazed and said, "How does he know the scriptures since he hasn't been trained?" Jesus answered them, "My teaching isn't mine, but is from the one who sent me. If anyone wants to do his will, he will understand whether the teaching is from God or if I'm speaking on my own. The one who speaks for himself seeks his own glory, but he who seeks the glory of the one who sent him is true, and there is no unrighteousness in him."
Spycraft being done here. Jesus needs, for some reason, to be in Jerusalem, but he does not need to be there the way everyone's goading him to go be there as a conquering savior. I mean, later it'll come time for the Passover feast where he'll actually enter into the city as a savior, as a king approaching on a donkey humbly. And we know how that played out the rest of the week. I think Jesus knows full well that if he actually entered the city now like that, all bets are off. Game over.
He still has much to do.
But he still had a plan to be there for this holiday, for this Feast of Tabernacles. And so you and I have been talking about, what does the Feast of Tabernacles actually mean? How does it fit in with the experience of the Jewish people? So let's talk about that for a couple of minutes.
Well, the Feast of the Tabernacles is an ancient celebration in the Hebrew culture.
One of the very first.
Yeah, and it originally started because they were celebrating leaving Egypt, and it was their trek through the wilderness, their pilgrimage, basically, through the wilderness to the Promised Land. This is one of the ascent festivals where they go into Jerusalem, where they gather in. So there's a lot of things happening with this festival. It's part of the ingathering or the harvest.
So the difference being not just a national holiday, which all of them are, but one where you would actually go do something or go to some place specifically.
Exactly. Yeah. So they spend time for 7 days in makeshift tent or a tabernacle, they would have called it. Maybe not the same kind of thing that we think of a tabernacle here in the West, but it was just a small shelter that they would build basically on the side of the road. They would shelter there for this feast during this festival. And at the end of that was the Time of Atonement. This is one of the festivals of the pilgrimage when they all come into Jerusalem to celebrate.
And in this year of 2021, they'll be celebrating that in Israel from the date of September 20th through 27th, which is a Monday to a Monday. But it's like a national camping holiday. You actually go somewhere, like going to the beach, like a Labor Day or Memorial Day weekend, to get out and go do something. But to them, the sacred place, of course, was Jerusalem. It's to gather you all in to celebrate the things that God has brought you from and brought you to.
Well, it was very interesting. I just got online and searched Festival of Tabernacles. It just showed these really interesting structures that people have built throughout history and what they looked like. And they're just basically a lean-to. Just some poles with another piece of wood propped up against them, or branches or something like that. It's not an elaborate structure. It wasn't intended to be an elaborate structure, I should say. So that is the celebration that's happening right now. So I'm sure that Jerusalem was crowded beyond movement through through the city.
The streets have never been wide there,
Tabernacles and all of these little tents and things on the side of the road, because that's where they would do them. They would just build them outside of their houses, even maybe like in their little front sitting area or yard, if they had a yard.
So let's jump to the discussion now of why Jesus at this particular festival and why to be secret about it. What do you think?
Well, I think it had to do with the discussion we had about his family and his brothers goading him on to go to this festival and wanting to make a public show of it. Perhaps they were wanting to embarrass him or shame him or help him realize, hey, you're not the guy you think you are. You're not this Messiah or the son. You know, you're just our brother.
And let's see if you're really a big fish by going to the big pond.
Right. And maybe we can tag along and get famous right along with you if that's the case. You know, so who knows what the family dynamic was about? We can assume one thing or another, but we don't really know.
One thing it really is clear, though, Jesus purposely misled them about what his intentions were. Now, that's an interesting thought to camp on. Jesus himself purposely misdirecting people, his own family in this case. Because a couple of things might have happened. If he said, yeah, I'm going up later, but I'm not going with you, then they would have expected him. They probably would have told everybody along the way, yeah, big brother's coming, just you watch out. Or we'll see if he's really got what it takes to mix it with a big fish down here in Jerusalem again.
Right.
They're probably disregarding the fact he's already done this journey a couple of times, and Jesus is intending to go up there for different reasons that they don't know about, which is what the case seems to be. It seems that in the history of Jesus and his walk on earth, he didn't miss a party. He didn't miss a celebration. He didn't miss something of historic significance to the people. He wanted to experience all of it in person.
He was an observant Jew. He lived his life in the manner of observing all the Jewish holidays and the laws. He kept the law. He walked in that pathway to do the things that were expected of a good Jewish person.
So he goes to do this thing because it's the right thing to do, but also I think because he wants to experience all of it. He's not going to miss those opportunities to be with his Father and experience them together with the Spirit. The Spirit himself seems to be telling Jesus, don't tell them what your plans are.
Well, perhaps it was so that he could come in more unnoticed and get to the temple complex more easily to begin his teaching.
And he did. And, of course, John is recording this as one of those eyewitnesses. So he tells what the talk on the street was like. So obviously with his own ears, he was hearing this coming into the city. And then, of course, it says halfway through the festival, suddenly, poof, Jesus is there teaching in the temple. Apparently, they don't report him to the authorities right away. They're just like, wow, something about what he says. I want to hear this. So don't run off yet. Don't go tell the authorities. Let's hear what he has to say.
Listen in closely.
So they're wondering at him. In other words, not wondering what he's saying, but just in wonder and awe that a guy can be in that much command of truth, that the words coming out of his lips are always truthful. They sense it.
Yeah.
Man, I can't think of a better time in history to recapture the wonder and awe of truthfulness. You know, we're awash now and seas of it. We don't even know who's lying anymore when it comes to things like politics and culture. All around the world, there seems to be just this war of lies constantly waging. And I'm not taking sides on anybody's perception of an argument that might be happening right now on social media. It's just to say that we all sense it, that this is a time of lying. When you're in a time like that, you hear someone speak the pure truth, which is kind and gentle and from the heart of God. It's got to be like an oasis, a cool water, a stream in the desert, when you're so used to being parched by the scathing words of others. Something about what Jesus was teaching moved them. But it's interesting to me, too, that it does not seem like there's much said about what Jesus said up to this point that wowed them. In the next program, we will talk more about what he actually said in the rest of his sermon that so rankled some and so relieved others. But I just want to wrap up our first part of this program to talk about the motivations. Why would Jesus go out of his way to mislead? You know, when he goes before Pontius Pilate, he doesn't mislead him. He does not answer him. But in the case of his family, he has to literally go into hiding and not let them know he intends to follow them.
Well, he knows the intentions of their heart. Yeah. They've already probably had these conversations. You know, come on, Jesus, knock it off. Stop doing these things. Stop traveling around like this. You're kind of embarrassing us. And so then he knows their motivation is to silence him. So he can't, in some ways, be completely upfront with them. He has to be covert about this operation that he's doing, about his trip to Jerusalem. And because he knows the Jews are out to get him, they've already made that clear. They want him gone. He knows if he goes with his family, if there's an entourage, he's more likely to get picked up by the temple leaders.
One, these brothers of his might be family, but they weren't disciples yet.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't believe in him or have put their trust in him to say, God speaks through this man.
Well, we know that his brother James becomes a pillar in the church.
He does.
But he doesn't believe until the resurrection happens.
Yeah. So during this time, he knows that they will completely misread what's going on because the Spirit's not moving in them. In fact, he says it in the Amplified version kind of like this. You can go ahead. My time has not come, but any time is perfectly fine for you. The world cannot hate you since you are part of it. But it does hate me because I denounce it and testify that its deeds are evil. Go up to the feast yourselves. I'm not going up to this feast because my time has not yet fully come. So he says, go on, party on, do what you want to do. But he's also making a sermon statement there saying, you don't get it. And I at least need to say that in front of witnesses here, that your motives are not God's motives for going to this party.
You're part of the world.
So your motives for me are not going to be God's motives for me.
Right.
And when the Father has an agenda, has a plan for Jesus and his work on earth, Jesus knows who to listen to. He's not going to listen to other voices that are obviously not in command of truth. They're not in command of the authority to put sin on notice and to put death on the dock ready for execution. He's wanting to kill death itself. That's his mission. When you have people that don't get it, you say, you don't get it. I love you anyway. Go have fun, but I'm not part of that. But it's a very interesting chapter for me that Jesus, we always think about him being a truth teller. He is, but he also is one that follows truth, who is a person and obeys it and is willing to do things that seem later kind of questionable, outside the expected, to do the thing that might not seem reasonable, to do something that no one expected next, which was to go there as a spy, to see what people are really saying about him and about the kingdom on earth. And then to step out at a moment where the Spirit says, now's the time to speak. And how many times have we been challenged in our own lives, shut your mouth. And the Spirit just says, zip it. And we don't. We feel like we're compelled or we have a right to talk or speak our minds anytime we feel like it. And the Spirit just saying, wait.
Just stay silent.
Bide your time. It's not to gin up more anger.
Right.
Or to have a flame torch ready to go out of our mouths when the time comes right, but simply to settle down, settle in, and let the Spirit start working on your heart.
I think that's one of the reasons I really appreciate what our mentors taught us in our praying, is asking God what he wants us to know. We talked about this on Compassion Radio numbers of times in the past, and it's such a great way to pray. But you really have to be intentional about that prayer and listen, because you can always say, well, what do you want me to know about this? Or what do you think about this, God?
But and if then we ignore the answer.
Exactly. If we don't sit intentionally with the Lord in quiet and stillness, maybe not physically, but even in our mind and physically moving around, but being still in our spirit and asking God what he wants us to know and then listening for him to direct us. We just recently had a prayer that we were praying because we felt like there was some action that we needed to take in a situation. And separately, but together, God told both of us, be still. Just be still. Both of us are people of action. We want to take action.
There's always so much time in the week to work
with. Right, but we have to learn to be still.
And we're having to be still about many things right now. I imagine a lot of people are feeling that way. God is saying be still, but they don't know how. And they feel very anxious or jittery while they try to wait. And in their own strength, it's difficult. I don't have a firm answer for you other than to say that God does have an answer. And if we'll ask him and be disciplined enough to zip it and wait for him and seek him out, be available to him to find us and whisper in our ear. I don't think a spirit ever denies us that if we're willing to be available to him that way. For 78 years now, we've depended on the faithful encouragement of friends just like you to bring this unique radio and media ministry to the air each day. You can drop us a line, ask a question, submit a prayer request, or download a free Bible study guide in just the same way. It all happens at CompassionRadio.com. This dynamic gospel is available to you in a handy paperback edition, and I'd love to send you one when you send your gift and ask for it. Remember, this is a 100% listener-supported ministry. If you've never supported us before, would you consider doing so this month? I know many of you can and want to give more, so I'll not be shy in asking for that support. Thank you for seriously considering this request and challenge. Our toll-free order line is 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. If you need to call early or late, that's okay. Just make sure to leave your name and phone number, and we'll get back to you immediately when the doors open each business day. You can also give anytime online at CompassionRadio.com. And if you prefer to put a stamp on it, you can always find us at Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. God bless you as you stretch your faith this year of 2021. I hope we can be a real encouragement and challenge to you for many, many years to come. And make sure to ask for your own copy of The Dynamic Gospel when you contact us today. Let's turn now toward the edition that we have available to our Compassion Radio listeners and our supporters. It's called The Dynamic Gospel. It's a retelling of the Gospel of John in contemporary English. And we'd love to send a copy of it to you. If you're interested in reading it or having a copy of it to share with your friends or do a Bible study, we have weekly Bible studies on this material every week. We'd love to have those in your hands and armed with a new and fresh perspective on these words. Chapter 7, verse 1. After this, Jesus journeyed about in the region of Galilee. Judea was out of the question for the time being. The religious leaders there had sworn to kill him. When the Feast of Tabernacles was at hand, his family told Jesus, "Now is the time to head for Judea. People are eager to witness your healing miracles firsthand. We're all committed to go, so you'll probably be safe enough. Anyway, it's too late to keep a lid on it here in Galilee. The word is out all over the country. If you can't stop healing people, you might as well step into the limelight." This actually showed a fundamental lack of trust in Jesus' judgment. A spirit of fatalism was creeping in. Things were dicey, and even his own brothers weren't thrilled where things were going. The disciples hoped the tide of public opinion would finally swing in Jesus' favor and get them out of danger. As it was, they felt safer when they kept moving. "Oh, no you don't," Jesus replied. "This isn't the time for a final push, no matter how eager you are to get on with it. Worried about your public image, are you? Well, they're not concerned about you. It's me they're after. I'm the one who keeps telling them how messed up they are. Go on, be gone with you. Enjoy the feast. I'm not coming up yet. I will eventually, but all the pieces are not yet in place." That was the end of the discussion. The others left for Judea. Jesus stayed put in Galilee. It was a ruse. Jesus made his way to Jerusalem on his own, incognito, remaining that way throughout the week. When the religious leaders spotted the group of disciples, they supposed Jesus must be with them and immediately went about setting traps. Jesus was the talk of the town. Lively discussions ensued with huge arguments over his character. Was he good or bad? Godly or demonic? Some were convinced he was the liberator. Others equally convinced he was a sly deceiver. But nobody dared to debate it openly in front of the religious leaders. They weren't about to risk getting arrested over it. Midway through the festival week, Jesus stepped into the thick of things and openly started speaking right in the middle of the temple grounds. This is where the religious leaders themselves debated the issues of the day. And still, no one recognized him right away. The angles Jesus added to the debate boggled their minds. He didn't sound like a seminary graduate, but his take on things probed deep spiritual truths. He obviously knew the scriptures. They wanted to know if he subscribed to a new school of thought. "No," Jesus answered, "I'm just repeating the positions of my teacher. He sent me here." If you understand what I'm saying, it's pretty clear the scriptures have been saying it all along. It's nothing new, so it comes from God. I'm not making stuff up or pulling it out of thin air. He who invents a new doctrine is trying to put his stamp on the world and seek personal glory. If I seek any glory, it's for the one who sent me. To hide his truth or deny him the glory he's due would be a real injustice. I will not impute unrighteousness to him.
The dynamic gospel sounds a little more intentional about what Jesus is doing here. Yeah. He's talking about bringing glory to God and not to himself. And this could be another reason he told his brothers, go on ahead of me, because he doesn't want to get any of the glory of himself. And if he goes with them, they're going to make a big deal of it. You know, they might be like, here he comes, here's Jesus, you know, because of they're his brothers. I mean, I had big brothers and you're a big brother. So how you goad on your brothers and sisters and, you know, siblings do those things to each other.
Jabbing and provoking sometimes.
They grew up with you. They know which side of the bed you sleep on. They know where you go to do your favorite things. They know what kind of food you like. They know all about you. And so
they think they do.
They think they know all about you. So I think about being part of a family and being recognized by my siblings as not being anything special. Hmm. You know, I mean, they love me, but I'm not this great person that they think. I'm just their sister. And so maybe that's the way they're looking at Jesus. Maybe they're still just trying to figure out what their place is in all of this.
As we are today across 2,000 years, where do we fit in this picture? How hard it must be to grow up with the Savior of the world, not knowing what's coming until much, much later, and have him keep humbling himself in this way, saying, oh, go ahead. But he's also, like we talked about earlier, pointing out the truth about their situation. They're not really buying in yet. Mm-hmm. And interesting thought that came to mind as you were finishing up, you said last, about what Jesus would be saying in the temple. It's halfway through the week. This is a celebration of the tabernacles, telling the story of the Exodus and the entrance into and the inhabitation of the land, the kingdom being established. I would guess that there probably was a liturgy that happened very regularly and scriptures that were read on any given day of that week that would highlight some great event in the history of the Jewish people. When you step in halfway into the story, they've made it to the land, but they're having to track down all the places that God said to take and to inhabit it, to set up their life there, to become the kingdom in the place where they are. I'm wondering if some of the things that he started stepping in to teach about had to do with what the kingdom is like, which seems to be always the theme of his teaching. The kingdom is. And he tells parables constantly about that. So perhaps he's stepping into it. If he's going to be public about it, he'll talk about the thing which is number one message, the kingdom of God. And from there, the battle royale begins over what it is that God really wants to happen on this earth. And Jesus takes a side. He talks about the kingdom and redefines the kingdom in ways that rattle the entire world system. There's still truths that are rattling the world system.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about more of those on next week's program. So friends, I encourage you again, if you've gotten anything out of this Compassion Radio Chasing the Word series, especially on the Book of John, jump in with us. Join back a number of chapters and listen up if you haven't heard anything before, if it's brand new to you. Get a copy of the book yourself and read it through with us as we go week to week. And make it a feast for you to discover what God might have for you in the story of Jesus as told by this young man known as Best Friend.
We sure would like to get your input on this too. If you have any ideas or suggestions for us or just comments on the things that we talk about on Chasing the Word, please let us know.
You can write us anytime at info@CompassionRadio.com. You can write me directly too, BramFloria@CompassionRadio.com. And catch any of our podcasts there on the website as well. Thanks so much, friends, for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow for the next Compassion Radio.
Yet not I, but through Christ in me.
God bless you as you stretch your faith this year of 2021. I hope we can be a real encouragement and challenge to you for many, many years to come. And make sure to ask for your own copy of The Dynamic Gospel when you contact us today. Remember, none of this is possible without you. If you believe hearing the good news from the front lines of faith builds your faith, then let us know today. Just call us at 1-800-868-2478. Write us at Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Or make your gift through our website, compassionradio.com. We need you, friend, so contact us today.